This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Today, two guests, two of the people in my ecosystem who marinate in sports viewership and sports ratings every day. I have great respect for them, and I trust their insight and data. John Lewis is the founder and editor of the Sports Media Watch. If you are a kind of a sports viewership nerd as I am, you are probably already following him on Twitter under his Paulson designation. Austin Karp is the Sports Business Daily Managing Editor / Digital. Again, one of the Bibles of the profession. And Austin Karp, if you subscribe to that publication, as you know, is the person who pretty much chronicles the viewership for all of us regarding trends and other interesting things. And I'm pleased to be joined by John Lewis and Austin Karp on the Sports Media Podcast. Fellas, thank you for coming back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
All right, I'm going to start with you, Austin, and we're going to start with the NFL draft. The 3 days of the NFL draft averaged 6.1 million viewers across ESPN, ABC, NFL Network, probably some digital stuff, or maybe I'll specify the digital stuff. That was down from a record 8.2 million last year, but generally speaking, pretty close to flat from 2019. So let me start with you, Austin. What does that mean? What can we take away from the viewership in the NFL draft?
You know, thinking about it in the three-day perspective, there's still interest there. They're still interested in it as a live event. People will still sit there for, what is it, 5 or 6 hours on a Saturday and just keep it up as background noise. But I think what we really need to hone in on is that first round. I mean, think of it like the Oscars. It's like the NFL puts best picture, best actor, best director, you know, all the best categories on Thursday night. And then you get best cinematography on Friday or Saturday. So that first round number, which is what people are really paying attention to, that was really strong and ahead of what I thought, ahead of what my colleague John Aram thought it was going to be. It wasn't what it was for the record-setting number last year when there was absolutely nothing going on, no competition. But come back this year to see the strong number that that first round put out. Thank you to Adam Schefter and Aaron Rodgers for helping boost it a little bit. But it was good to see that a live NFL event in the offseason can still do well like that.
You mentioned Oren. I mean, that guy's dead to me at the moment. He's on too many other podcasts.
I'm trying to get rid of him. I can't get rid of him.
He's Kylo Ren. hard to get rid of him. All right. So John Lewis, Austin Karp says, you know, yes, the 3 day average is flat, or it's down actually a little bit from 2019. But the focus, he says, should be on that opening night. That opening night was 12.5 million, jumped 13%. From 2019, obviously for the NFL, ESPN, ABC, NFL Network, you got to be thrilled by that. So, should we focus more on that? Should we focus more on that first day number, in your opinion, than the 3 day number?
I think you can kind of focus on both. That first night, obviously, that's a massive number by any standard. Beats the Oscars, beats pretty much everything else on TV. Pretty safe bet it's going to beat some NBA Finals and World Series games this year as well. But I do think the three-day number matters because the fact is that pace wasn't sustained in day two and day three. Day three was, obviously you're talking about the final three rounds of a three-day draft. The fact that it does as well as it does is incredible. But, you know, it wasn't the strongest finish. So that tells me there's not necessarily vulnerability there, nothing to really worry about. But the fact is, I mean, NFL Network had its least watched draft telecast in at least 9 years with that day three. I don't think that's nothing. But again, if you're the NFL, you're doing backflips that, you know, you had the kind of number that you had for that first round. I just wouldn't say that, you know, the second and third rounds are completely meaningless. I think there's a little bit to look at there. And maybe what we might be seeing is that people are more judicious with their viewing. They might tune in for a first round, a big event, and not necessarily stick around as much for, you know, the kind of more boring elements that second and third night.
You know, it's interesting. I'll stick with you, Austin, here, because like John makes a really interesting point. Like day three's down. Like there's no spinning that for the NFL. But if you sort of take a top-down like view, they're still drawing like 2.7 million viewers across the three networks. Do you know how many sporting properties would kill for 2.7 million viewers? And this is day three of the draft. You know, we're not talking like day one. So it's down, and I think John Lewis has sort of hit on something in that, like, it's not event viewing here. Like, this is sort of diehard viewing, and maybe there's something we can extrapolate from diehard viewing. But 2.7 million is still a massive number in 2021 for a quote-unquote sporting event.
The answer to your question is every league would kill for that number. Any property would kill for that number. But what John said is true. NFL Network on its own, you know, down significantly on Saturday. ESPN, similarly, down significantly on Saturday. But you're also throwing the event on ABC now, which, you know, for many years, it did not have that broadcast TV presence. So you're getting a three network exposure there on Friday and Saturday and Thursday. And it's just become this really cool event. They're trying these gimmicky things, and it's not necessarily bringing in the viewers. So maybe they can tinker with it. But seeing that it's getting a steady audience there, even in a, I guess, if you want to call it a not as exciting 2 through 7 rounds, they have to be happy. Network execs have to be happy. Advertisers have to be happy. The league has to be happy.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, I want to switch to the Kentucky Derby. And I'll start with you here, John. My thesis, rightly or wrongly, was that what the Derby did this year was going to be an indicator for how we might see viewership later on in the year for what I would call like the jewel events. And like jewel events to me are like, you know, the NBA postseason, or the like the NHL Stanley Cup, Major League Baseball All-Star Game, you know, maybe one of these golf championships like, you know, the U.S. Open or something like that, NASCAR, Coca-Cola 600, the Olympics, I feel like, and I'll end with that with you guys. But like, I feel like that's just its own sort of separate animal. So I wrote this piece for The Athletic, and sort of my thesis was that I thought we can learn a lot from whatever the Derby viewership was, because the viewership was so down last year when they moved it. You know, they changed the calendar. They made the Kentucky Derby later in the year. They made it the second race of the Triple Crown as opposed to the first. And NBC records 14.5 million viewers with a peak of 15.7 million when Medina Spirit wins the race. Probably another 100,000 or so via streaming. Now, as you and Austin know, that is down from sort of what we saw even like 3 or 4 or 5 years ago when that race was pulling, you know, 16 million or so, a little bit more. But I thought that's a pretty good viewership number, as we're still in the middle of a pandemic, given what that number was last year, which was the lowest of all time. So it makes me maybe a little cautiously optimistic about some of the other numbers we're going to see later this year with these jewel events. But before you get to that, I want to ask you just on the Derby itself, what did you think of that viewership number?
I thought it was a very strong number, given everything. You know, the fact that they were able to basically recoup nearly all of their losses from last year in terms of viewership, going from 9.26 to 14.37. I mean, that's, other than getting all the way back to 2019 or 2018, that's about as good as NBC could have hoped for. I was thinking maybe 11, 12, 13 million. I had actually said to your colleague, Bill Shea at The Athletic, that I thought maybe it might beat the Oscars and the NFL draft. And then by the time of the race, I was actually second guessing myself because I'm like, there's no hype for this. Horse racing doesn't generally get a lot of hype, and we're still dealing with the conditions of everything. And then for it to get 14 million, I was pretty surprised by that. That was a very strong number. I don't necessarily know how much of a harbinger that will be for the NBA and Stanley Cup, but I do think it was a strong number for the Derby.
What did you think, Austin, when you saw that come in?
I was surprised as well. I did not think it would do that strong a number, but it did. And it just, I think it does go to reinforce that there is pent up demand for watching a normal sporting event. You know, it wasn't a packed house at Churchill Downs, but there was, you had the pomp and the pageantry and the hats, and it kind of had that semblance of normalcy, kind of like the draft did, with having people at the draft live, high-fiving Roger Goodell, sitting in his chair. It's like a return. It's the start of a return to normal, and I think it might be a harbinger of some better numbers. I agree with John. I don't know if it's going to help the NHL, but, you know, I think it could help the NBA. I think it will help the Olympics. It could help the All-Star game. We didn't even see a Wimbledon last year, so could it help something like that? And I think if we see a normal schedule, the start of college football in particular, I think you'll see an uptick to start the season.
All right, let's stick with you, Austin. And I want to talk about the NBA postseason and the NHL postseason. These will be, generally speaking, back in their normal windows. Although, again, these have been very, you know, the reality. I mean, this has still been a very unique and unlike any other season. I mean, take the NHL. We have a Canadian division. We've never had that before. We may never have that again. In the NBA, we have play-in games for, you know, 10th, 9th seed. That may stick, but the point is, again, that has not happened before. We still are dealing in both sports with very minimal fans. So while it feels more like, it feels certainly different and closer to the norm than 2020 was, still an abnormal year. I mean, there's no way around that. So that said, when you're looking to extrapolate or when you're thinking about how the NBA postseason and the NHL postseason, give me some of the things you're thinking about in terms of potential viewership here.
You know, I'll start with the NBA. I mean, it's going to be so much kind of name. It's going to be name driven, like it is a lot of times. People want to see LeBron play. They're going to want to see some of the bigger names. Like, I know Jamal Murray's not going to be there for the Nuggets, but I don't think he's a household name anyways. But if you see, you're going to see Kevin Durant and Kyrie and James Harden, you know, for the first time in the playoffs with the Nets, like kind of going at it and making the Eastern Conference, you know, maybe it actually matters now. And something I'm really paying attention to are the Knicks. If they can draw in, if they can make a run here and make it to maybe the Eastern Conference semifinals, finals, you're going to be able to see a huge number coming out of the New York market. And it's really going to help boost some of those numbers.
John, let me tell. Well, I'm going to get back to you on the NHL, Austin, but John, let's stick with the NBA. I mean, there's no spinning it. The NBA's viewership last year in the finals were horrific for the NBA. Again, you know, context is king. Let's keep it in mind. There are some places, obviously, that would kill for, you know, 8.5 million viewers. In fact, every scripted show right now on television would. But, you know, that series, like at one point in that series, they drew under 6 million for a game. I think the last game of the series, John, you probably are more facile at this or can do it off the top of your head. I think it was a little over 8 million, if I remember right, for Lakers Heat final. It was a very low NBA finals. I mean, I remember I covered.
Low is being kind, Richard.
Yeah, right, exactly. Low is being kind. I covered the Raptors Warriors series because obviously I live in Toronto and work up here now. And, you know, there was talk like, man, that was not a good finals viewership. Look at the finals viewership in 2019 compared to 2020. And the NBA, you know, would have gone through what Andy Dufresne did in Shawshank to get those numbers. So, yeah, Austin is correct. The viewership cratered. I think there's a lot of different reasons for why it cratered. I'm not litigating that on this podcast. Lord knows I've done it enough. But you should probably never sort of make guarantees, John. But honestly, I would be stunned if the viewership's not up this year. And we could see the viewership up significantly. And that only because I think the calendar is just more normalized. How do you see, if you had to take a guess regarding what you think the postseason will see, what are some of the things you're thinking about?
Well, you know, one problem, and I would agree, it would be absolutely shocking if the ratings for the finals weren't up double digits. But, you know, there's a big difference between being up the way the Derby was, up 50%, or the way the Masters was, up 60%, and being up 25, 30%. And because the NBA is taking place, you know, the second round should be underway right now, right? You know, by the time the playoff starts, everything, you know, knock on wood that everything can start as scheduled, that's going to be around the time the conference finals would usually start. You know, I mean, you're going to have first round games on Memorial Day. That's usually, I mean, the NBA finals started the day after Memorial Day back in 2019. So it's still it's a normal time of year still for the NBA. Obviously, much better time of year than last year, if only just because they don't have to go up against the NFL. I truly believe that the league coming back at the end of July instead of the start made a huge difference there, because if they had had the finals out of the way by maybe week one of the NFL season, I think they would have gotten some better numbers. Nothing dramatically better, but still better than what they got. So time of year matters. But I also think, you know, Austin was talking about, hey, we might get to see Durant, Harden, and Kyrie. I mean, are we sure? You know, I mean, are we sure everyone's going to be healthy? You know, what about COVID protocol? I mean, we've seen that affect teams already, with Schroeder out, with Zach LaVine, and the Bulls were in the playoff hunt, and then he was out with COVID protocol. De'Aaron Fox in Sacramento doesn't seem to have hurt the Kings that much. They've won a few games lately against good teams. But, you know, I would be shocked if there wasn't at least one key player who had to miss a round with COVID. And, you know, what if it's a star, right? What if the Lakers and Celtics get knocked out in that play-in round?
The thing, Austin, you too, John, as well. The thing I've always said, this is, again, there's no Albert Einstein genius take here, but I think anyone who even a little more than casually writes about or pays attention to sports viewership, I think would agree that, and Austin hit on one of them, if the Knicks could ever sustain consistent winning, if the Bulls could ever contain consistent winning, and if the Warriors return to health, and when I say return to health, meaning Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, those guys are all in the lineup at the same time, you would have two mega markets in the East being some kind of destination viewing, which the league has been desperately needed, and maybe Brooklyn will ultimately be that. And you'd have the team, Austin, that for 4+ years, 5 years, was essentially your best television team, better than LeBron's team. I mean, you know, people's memories are short, but the Warriors basically carried this league from, you know, 2015 to 2018/19. They were putting up mega numbers. I mean, again, people forget about this. The NBA Finals drew 31 million in 2016 when the Warriors played the Cavs with all those stars.
It was like Michael Jordan era. I mean, dating back to that time, it was huge.
Correct. Right. We're not so far away. So again, I get all your sort of people out there who are like, no one's coming back to the NBA because of social justice messaging, blah blah blah. There are factors that, if you're just going to be honest with yourself, if you're going to sort of talk about this in good faith, the reality is, like, the NBA is not far away from a couple things happening on the court. Again, I'm not saying they get back to, you know, Jordan era, because that's never going to happen. But these small things, Austin, would change the game, and I think you hit it with the Knicks. The New York market has not been in play for this league, it feels like, at this point, for 15 years. I mean, I grew up in New York. I remember how important the Ewing, Starks, Oakley, you know, Van Gundy, those teams were so important to the league in terms of viewership. And the league hasn't gotten anything out of New York and Chicago in forever. So I'm with you. I feel like if the Knicks could even, man, if they could just win a round, I think it's game changing.
I agree. I mean, can you imagine a Knicks-Nets series? I mean, on ESPN or TNT would love to have a piece of that, and it would be huge. And, you know, I'm interested to see, I think during the last week of the season, when the selections have yet to be made yet for the national telecasts, I think on a Tuesday night, there's a Lakers-Knicks game, and that could be TNT's best regular season game. I mean, if LeBron is back in particular, but a strong Knicks team could really help that out. I mean, just as far as, you know, the playoffs from a 30,000 foot level, John hit on something that is interesting in the timing. And with everything sliding back, you're going to have to look at hut levels as we get deeper into the playoffs, the houses using televisions, because, you know, as you get deeper into June, people are out of school, people are going on vacation. So there might be less television watching, which is what we typically see during the summer. And it could hurt numbers on top of the fact that people are just watching, you know, TV is fragmented. Media viewing is fragmented now. And that is across sports. And people are just watching less of all of it. There is more out there. So individual things are being watched less. There are, like you said, so many mitigating factors.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
John, you have any thoughts on the NHL? I can tell you from living in Toronto that the Canadian division up here will get incredible viewership for those first two rounds of the playoffs. I don't think many people in the States are going to care, quite frankly, about the, you know, Leafs Canadians, Leafs Winnipeg, Winnipeg Oilers. But I don't really have a great feel as to how the NHL postseason is going to play this year in the States. You know, you're going to have some very good hockey markets, you know, the Bostons and the Washingtons. Vegas is a good hockey market, you know, in the playoffs and potentially going far. You got any thoughts? You got any feeling on this? That's honestly a little tricky for me to figure out, just given the we have a very different playoff scenario here where, you know, the Canadian division is sort of the Canadian division, and then you're eventually going to get one Canadian team in the Final Four no matter what.
Yeah, I think it's hard to get a feel generally because you don't see local ratings anymore. Obviously, we all know those local ratings across the board have to be tanking with the amount of difficulty they're having getting into people's homes. So we don't see local ratings anymore, and the national ratings really aren't very good at all. NBC, I think, just had its least watched NHL regular season game, or, well, period, because regular season and postseason. I think NBC just had their least watched game ever last week, under 600,000 for Lightning Red Wings. You know, neither the NHL nor the NBA are really doing so hot this season. You know, frankly, I think the NBA is faring a little bit better than the NHL is. I think the NHL has really had a very quiet, forgettable year. And I feel like, I mean, you know, I maybe I'm projecting a bit, but I don't know how much faith everyone has in the NHL's idea. Do you really think you're going to be able to make this work in a way that, you know, feels right? Because trying to bring in the Canadian team, they're going to be playing in the States at some neutral site eventually. It's just going to be kind of odd. And the changes to the divisions, the fact that you haven't had anyone outside of their own division all season. With the NBA, at least you've had teams playing each other in a semi-normal fashion. I get the sense that between the NHL and the NBA, I feel like the NHL is going to have an even tougher road in this postseason because it's just been so different.
Yeah, they're going to need, I mean, history tells us that honestly, maybe NBC doesn't even care because they're lame duck owners at this point, but they're going to need a Boston or a Washington, maybe a Pittsburgh, like as one of those teams in the final. Like if it's Carolina or Tampa Bay, and by the way, those are terrific hockey teams.
Great teams, yeah.
Yeah, but they have no chance in viewership. Like that's history sort of has already told you that. No offense to Lightning or Hurricanes fans. I'm just being honest. Like that has no chance of rating nationally.
Richard, I've lived in North Carolina now for around 30 years, and I got to tell you, like I don't live in Raleigh, but I got to tell you, the North Carolina market is not going to bring it for a Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, it's a shame because like those are particularly Tampa Bay has been like almost like an all-star team in the NHL, but it's not a national draw unless it goes against a bigger traditional hockey market. So we'll see.
Eventually, the NHL is also they're gonna get a string where it's gonna be some Canadian teams in the finals. The NBC has not really had to deal with a whole lot of that. They haven't had to deal with Canadian teams winning it, and they very rarely have had to deal even with a Canadian team making the Stanley Cup final. They've been very lucky in that regard. But if you start seeing a bunch of Montreal, Vancouver finals, or the like, that hurts. That's going to hurt significantly. And like John said, I'm much more bullish on the NBA versus the NHL in terms of postseason success or the percentage of gains that they could likely see.
Before we close with the Olympics, Austin, I just want to let you have this real quick. Because you're in the sort of the area where this is a hotbed sport. I saw that FS1 averaged 2.74 million viewers for the NASCAR Cup race from Kansas, and that was a bigger audience than Dodgers Braves baseball, which is pretty impressive. But the thing I think that I've been seeing is that NASCAR's been up right the last couple of weeks. Which I like. I'm a fan of that sport. I think it's a really interesting sport. You have any thoughts as to why this is the case? Because NASCAR has honestly not had a good viewership story for a long time. So that was good to see.
You're right. All we've talked about, I feel like in my 15 years here, is the roller coaster drop that NASCAR numbers have seen. And I think we're finally getting to a point where they're leveling out to where they should be. And it's still an incredibly strong property. This season in particular, though, it's kind of tough to do that year-over-year comparison like it is for many of the leagues. Last season they were running some Wednesday night races and you had the break. But just seeing for the comparisons that are apples to apples, seeing that they are having some gains compared to spring races, even from the 2019 season, they're settling in into what their numbers are going to look like. It's in that PGA Tour range, but above like what an average PGA Tour event is going to do on a Sunday. It's still one of the best properties out there. The numbers are strong, cable or broadcast, and it's good for them, to be seeing these gains.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's finish up with this, and I'm going to bring you guys back probably before this actually starts, but since I have you both, I want to take advantage of it. The Tokyo Olympics at the moment are scheduled for July 23rd to August 8th. Now, anyone who is an Olympics fan, if you're reading about this, Tokyo is in really bad shape when it comes to COVID. There is so much financial on the line that I would expect this to happen. We can argue philosophically or morally or sort of on a humanistic level whether it should happen. And I think there's real argument that you're sending people in harm's way just so, Tokyo and the IOC can get paid from the NBCs and the like. But we'll table that for a second for this conversation to talk about viewership. John, I go two ways on this when I think about the Tokyo Olympics. If I want to take sort of the optimistic communal kind of experience, we're in a very polarized country. There are not many things that bring us together at the moment. The Olympics traditionally has been one of them. I think the notion of actually being able to sit down for 14 or for 17 days and watching people from your country compete in competition sounds really great and sounds awesome and something I want to cheer for. So that would be the positive sort of look at, okay, this is going to do really well. On the other hand, people are tired. The pandemic's taken a lot out of people. Sports viewership numbers have been down. It's a big commitment to sort of watch these Olympics for as long as they exist in terms of the amount of weeks. And there's going to be other sports going on then too. So in terms of your early kind of thesis, John, or prognosis, what do you make of the Tokyo Olympics?
I think it'll be like the Oscars, honestly. I feel like it's going to be pretty steep.
Decline, you're saying?
Yeah. I think it's going to be Oscars, NBA Finals level. Because one, I think it was going to be a pretty steep decline in the alternate universe where COVID never existed, and it took place in 2020. I think it was going to be a steep drop then. And I think especially a year out of schedule. So it's been 5 years since the last Summer Olympics, 3 years since the last Olympics overall. I think there's going to be, with all the all the precautions, you're probably not going to have hugely packed stadiums. Maybe you don't have fans at all. You don't have Phelps. You don't have Usain Bolt. You do have Simone Biles, but you need Phelps and Bolt too. You can't just have one person can't anchor an Olympics. And so I think it'll be. I think it'll make Rio, which was a pretty shockingly low number at the time, I think it'll make Rio look like Atlanta or Los Angeles by comparison.
That's interesting. And I do think, Austin, one of the advantages of some of these Olympics, of course, is having built-in stars. And, Bolt and Phelps in particular were, two global icons who carried, who basically could carry your, other than gymnastics, your two sort of most important viewership sports. So those two guys are gone. Obviously, there are still stars in the sport, the Katie Ledeckis and stuff. But that's a really good point by John. Are you as are you like John in that you see some declines coming too?
Oh, absolutely. John hit it on the head there. I think you'll see it right off the bat. You'll see the least watched opening ceremony, and then as we get right into it. I can't, outside of Ledecky, I can't really name anybody in the swim team. I know it's May. I know we really haven't had the trials yet, but that's the first week and you're going to see a pretty sharp drop off there. And, I really don't know too many members of the USA track and field team yet. Again, we haven't had the trials or there hasn't been that mass marketing push. Is there going to be a mass marketing push behind any individuals? So I do agree that it isn't, it's a very name-driven thing and this is the first time in 15, 20 years, then we're not going to have a Phelps there. You're not going to have an Usain Bolt, with appointment viewing. I mean, you always knew during these things, oh, Michael Phelps' race is coming on. He's got that chance at an X number of golds in a row, or Usain Bolt is running the 100. And, that was destination viewing. And I just don't know that NBC is going to have that for these games.
Do you think there's anything, before I let you guys go, anything NBC can do? In terms of sort of television tricks to try to juice the number? I saw one thing, Austin and John, that you can watch the opening ceremonies this year, correct, live, which generally speaking, you've never been able to do before, and they'll still obviously do it on prime time with, the storytelling elements that they like. But sort of off the top of my head, other than like Austin sort of was just hinting at, like trying to get ahead of this like a month and a half or 2 months early to create – or at least attempt to create some new stars of the games. I do think this is a challenge. And I think John also hit on something that's really important that probably we haven't thought enough about, and is no crowds. Like, you remember like early in the pandemic when you were watching sort of soccer, like Bundesliga soccer, and yeah, you'd watch it or something like that because it was the only sport on TV, but man, it felt eerily silent. And in my lifetime, we've never had an Olympics with no crowd. And I do think that would factor in television. So, John, we'll finish with you. Anything you think NBC can do to try to juice this, or do you just throw as much shit as you can on marketing and hope for the best in what's likely going to be a down viewership play?
I mean, I think for NBC, what you really have to do is just say whatever and move on to Paris in 2024. There's nothing they can do.
Or Beijing in 2022, right?
Well, I mean, honestly, I don't...
Go Belichick. We're focused on Paris. Yes.
No, I hear you. Really, that's, Beijing's a tough sell, too.
Massive. Yeah, exactly. I don't know what that's going to look like in terms of the pandemic or really even anything else. And that's a Winter Games anyway. So, that's not even going to be a big draw relatively anyway.
Not to mention, we haven't even got to the political aspect of that. There are going to be people who are going to be very against those games, given the United States relationship with China. That's going to be a really tricky scenario for NBC.
Richard, that's a podcast for The Atlantic, not The Athletic, all right?
Oh, wait, I always just get those two mixed up. That's right. Thank you, Austin. You're like O-Rand. You stick to sports. Austin, do you have – is there anything you think NBC can do, or do you agree with John here and just like that – You do your best, and ultimately your next mega viewership play is Paris.
I mean, you know, apparently if you leak that Aaron Rodgers might be running on the USA track team, that could help drive viewership. That's a proven commodity to help attract viewers. I mean, for the Winter Games, if you say Tanya and Nancy might be hosting the opening ceremony in Beijing, that could also help.
A long time ago, Austin.
Exactly. You know, but, you know, I think that could still pull in some numbers. Yeah, it's... there has to be some drama. You got to create some drama. It's got to come from somewhere. Maybe, you know, these games in particular, 21 and 22, helps create some new blockable
for 2024.
Maybe this is, you know, just part of the Olympic process where we're going to be developing stars.
Basketball usually, like, even though basketball has all the NBA guys, like, if, I mean, you, John, you'd probably know off the top of your head, but like, does that do well other than like the final game? Like, are there, like, are people watching that stuff, or is it sort of ultimately a, like a metal play kind of for the finals?
Well, it depends. If it's on NBC broadcast, you can get some pretty big numbers for that. The women's basketball, I think, had 10 million viewers for one of their games.
Yeah. It's a great team. One of the greatest, team Olympic, you know, like Olympic teams in global history. I don't think they've lost in five Olympics, that women's team.
Yeah. So if you're on the NBC broadcast network, you can do well on NBCSN. You know, I mean, you have to think back to, we're talking 2016. So at that time, maybe at the level of a pretty good regular season NBA game, but nothing too special.
Austin, are anyone from your office traveling to the Olympics?
Hey, I'm not sure yet. That's a good question. I'm not sure. I can't answer that.
I remember seeing Trip Mikkel and John Orand in, where would I have seen them?
In London. London. Yeah, they were both
correct.
In London.
Yes, yes. I was trying to remember if they were in Sochi with me, but I think it was London.
No, it was just Trip went to Sochi. I remember getting the pictures of the half-finished bathrooms from Russia.
Yeah, that was an interesting Olympics, I will say. You felt like you were in a bit of a stage play. That the Russians were hosting, and we were in the middle of sort of the Olympic Square. And once you left that bubble, it was, you sort of realized, it was a bit of a show. But in a way, Olympics are always shows. But yeah, they were.
If I'm NBC,
we take the media bus, and we'd see places which look like they were like sort of supposed to be housing, but like, you know, you looked inside and there was like no structure there. It was a strange Olympic. Interesting, but strange.
If I was NBC, I'd be more concerned if we were heading into the Los Angeles games and this was the case where we
yes.
were.
Right. And again, knock on wood, the world returns to normal. That was 2028 games should be a juggernaut.
It'll be a juggernaut. And I think they're going to put all their might into developing marketable, you know, everything they can to develop marketable stars. They have a really good team there at LA28, proven sports business executives who know how to do this. I think it's going to be incredibly well done.
Yeah. All right. Let's just hope aliens don't come and take the planet over before them. But yes, I agree with you. If we're still in these normal times, just like Fox for the World Cup, that's going to be US, Mexico, Canada. The viewership's going to be off the chart. All right. John Lewis. Let's talk about John Lewis, the fabulous John Lewis. Sports Media Watch's founder and editor. Check his site out, which, again, for those of us who are into this stuff, basically it's an absolute must check on a daily basis. I appreciate all the hard work John has done over the years. I kind of wish he sold his site to somebody who could throw him a shitload of money, like a DraftKings or something. But the guy basically has been an invaluable service for people like me. If you're on Twitter, follow him at Paulson, Paulsen underscore SMW. Austin Karp has also worked incredibly hard, but I can't give him as much praise as John Lewis, because Austin Karp works for a larger organization.
Second place on a two-man podcast. Thanks.
John Lewis is an independent. But follow Austin Karp's work at the invaluable Sports Business Daily. He's the managing editor / digital there. John and Austin, thank you very much for a really interesting conversation. I love talking about this stuff, and I do find that the viewers who either write me or give me some feedback, they dig these kind of conversations. So thanks so much, guys, for coming on today.
Good times, Richard. Thanks for having us.
Hey, thank you.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to John Lewis and Austin Karp for their insights. I always enjoy these conversations. It's kind of fun to nerd out on sports viewership. If you like these kind of conversations, please head to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch page on, you know, whether that's Stitcher or Google Play or iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review and a nice rating or a nice note. That's my bosses do see that. It actually has great meaning for me. So thank you to those who have done that. Previous podcast episodes, at least the last couple, before this one, NBC News and NBC national political correspondent Steve Kornacki, who picked the winner of the Derby, he talked about how he got into sports and how he's worked on Football Night in America and the Derby. That was a fun conversation. Good of him to come on. And to Sean Reed, who's my colleague at The Athletic, he covers the Raiders in Las Vegas, which I just think is an incredibly interesting beat. So Tashawn talked about how what it's like to cover the Raiders in Vegas and sort of the NFL in Las Vegas and how he got that job. Also talked a little bit about he had a very tough year. His family had a very tough year with COVID. So interesting guy, does great work at The Athletic. Appreciated him coming on. Before that one, David Purdom of ESPN, he talked about sports gambling, covering that beat, the trends and where things are going. And Grant Wall on the implosion of the Super League and MLS media rights. Before that, Jimmy Tran of Sports Illustrated, Chad Finn of the Boston Globe for some straight media talk. And then before that, Paul Heyman, if you're a wrestling fan, one of the greatest performers of all time, went behind the scenes on WrestleMania and the WWE and sort of that media universe. Again, thank you very much for listening. Appreciate everybody's support. We're closing in on getting closer to the 150 episode mark of this podcast, and obviously it's part of close to maybe a little over 200 episodes at Sports Illustrated, maybe under 300. I have to check that math on that. Anyway, thank you to Patrick Antonetti for his all his work, and I appreciate that. And thank you to everybody at Cadence 13 for supporting this podcast, and most of all, thanks to you for listening. We will see you soon again on the Sports Media Podcast.